There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. Lots to do on today's show. Chilly out there still today. Dr. Bill says, I think we don't top out, just upper 50s today. Then another night in the 30s tonight. A little warm-up tomorrow. And then real cold by the weekend. Hey, you can tell, finally winter has arrived in the last couple of weeks. The gigantic flocks of blackbirds are here. Have you noticed those? The big flocks of blackbirds and the robins, they've finally gotten here. So winter has arrived here on the cusp of February. All right, as I mentioned at the end of last hour, guest number one, my buddy Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation was already scheduled, of course, to be on, but it's lucky to have a political attorney and a man that has spent time in the trenches in Washington and knows what goes on in Montgomery to discuss this next subject of Alabama and our seven districts. Cameron, hey, man.
Hey, Sean, this is going to be an interesting one.
It is, and I got to tell you, as much as I study this, I still have a bunch of questions for you. So I guess we should just kind of set the framework here that this three-judge panel ruled that the map as drawn with our seven congressional districts violated the Voting Rights Act. Is that basically what's going on here?
Sure. The plaintiffs in the case had sought a preliminary injunction to stop the Secretary of State from conducting elections consistent with the map. And the court ultimately, the map being the one that was enacted by the Alabama legislature, the court ultimately agreed that there was a substantial likelihood that the plaintiffs would prevail on their Voting Rights Act claims that the map was an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. And so they said, you have 14 days to either redraw this map, and it needs to include two majority-minority districts, or we're going to do it for you. And so that's kind of where we stand right now, and this is potentially a huge shakeup for congressional politics in Alabama.
Yeah, okay, I got a lot of questions. Let's start off with the question of, I thought it was based on party, not on race. Wasn't that the dictate out of the court?
Yeah, I mean, this is what's really interesting here, is the question that I keep hearing is, well, it's legal to gerrymander based on party. And that's true in most cases. Where it's not true is in this unique case where you have a voting minority that's basically can show we can comprise a majority in a single member district, and basically you're removing our right to representation by diluting our vote. It's what's called a voter dilution claim, and that's the claim that's being alleged here. And the second question I get asked is, well, what changed? We've had one basically majority black Democratic district in Alabama since the 90s. Mm-hmm. What changed? And the answer is, and this is in the order, that basically the black population has grown in Alabama. The white population has shrunk as a percentage, and that shrunk about 10%. There's 10% a lower white population in Alabama than there used to be, and that gave the plaintiffs in the case the argument, we can now show that we can craft two reasonably constructed majority-minority districts in Alabama, and that needs to happen.
Okay, and I think, and I don't have it in front of me, but like 26.5% of the population was black or voting age.
Yeah, something about that.
Okay.
Right.
So out of that, out of the, you take seven districts, you take that against the whole, and you say, okay, two of the seven to represent that 26% need to be majority-minority.
Sure. I mean, and it's not an exact science there, but the idea is it's more than one. What happens, though, and this is really interesting, is right now there's one majority-minority district in Alabama. It's, Terry Sewell is the representative of the 7th Congressional District, and it's about 61% black. So what you have there is a district that's almost guaranteed to go Democratic, that black voters have the ability to select who they want. And these new maps, the ones that were proposed in the lawsuit, range from 50 to 54% black voting age population, which means that that sort of guarantee lock seat that you have in the 7th goes away in favor of two more competitive seats with very small majorities of black voters.
I like the idea of more competitive districts everywhere. I think we one sword sharpens the other. But I don't say that as a person with an R or a D behind my name. I'm conservative, but I do like the idea of more competitive districts. Now the question is, when you move these lines to accommodate that, right here at home in AL1, it looks like a fairly significant split coming to AL1 with AL2. And this is possible. Tell folks about that. AL2 coming on down into Mobile.
Yeah, some of the plans that were proposed ultimately have Mobile County split. And it looks sort of like the northwest side is carved off in several of the presentations proposed. In fact, I guess it's the Milligan maps that they proposed in their lawsuit. There's four different proposals, and in all four, some portion of Mobile County is chopped off.
And I remember talking to Representative Chris Pringle, working on this, of course, for the state, and we had like an hour conversation about some of the guidelines in this. And part of that was this idea of, if possible, you didn't break up a county, you didn't break up a city or a town, right? I mean, there's some, I don't know if the rules are solid, but there's something to be said for not breaking up regions like that. But this map does that.
Yeah, and this is actually what's really interesting, is there's sort of a collision between keeping the Gulf Coast counties whole or keeping the Black Belt together. And in this, the plaintiffs in this case basically said, look, the Black Belt is a community of interest because of its unique history, because of its racial composition, extreme poverty. And the argument that they made, that ultimately the court found persuasive, is that keeping the Black Belt together and pulling in part of Mobile County is more important than keeping Mobile County and Baldwin County whole.
So, yeah, give people an idea of the maps we're looking at. For example, and it's not a super detailed map, but I'm just guessing from looking at this map, where I live in Mobile, where I'm sitting at the radio station in Mobile, we're in the same district, District 2, by this map, as Montgomery. I mean, that's a lot of difference between Mobile and Montgomery.
Oh, yes. And that is a huge concern for, folks on the Gulf Coast region who look at this and say, hey, wait a minute, the coastal issues are very unique. You and I both know that. The counterpoint is, well, they're also unique in the Black Belt, and to construct the majority-minority district, you have to pull some of the population out of Mobile County. The way all of them look is about halfway down Mobile County would be in that coastal district, and then some portion of the northern half of Mobile County would go into the district with the Black Belt.
But like, for example, District 1 redrawn, y'all would have Dolphin Island and Dothan in the same district, District 1.
Yeah, okay. you could get some real interesting composition here. But again, this was the argument before the court, is that the unique history of the Black Belt was persuasive to them. And the other issue is, it enabled them to say, well, if we keep this group together, it's a relatively compact district with many whole counties that does adhere to principles of redistricting, so that it frankly doesn't, out of the model, several of them don't look weird. You would look at them on a congressional map and say, oh, that looks relatively normal, and that's what they endeavored to do.
Okay, now let's talk about what this could mean. You have this map we're looking at with 1 and 2 redrawn here. Does this pit AL1's congressman, our Congressman Jerry Carl, and AL2's Congressman Barry Moore in the same district? They have to compete again? How does this work out? Who's going? Who has to go and run against the other one?
Well, I mean, it could mean that, depending on where these ultimately fall out and who lives where in the districts. I think reasonably what you're looking at is the district around the 7th will become much more competitive for Republicans. I'm not saying it's a Republican lock by any chance, but it's competitive. It's within the range. The other district that comprises the Black Belt will become much more competitive for Democrats. So you're basically going to have two somewhat contested races. The other districts will remain, you know, pretty safely Republican. But, you know, you're going to have at least one member of Congress who's a Republican right now looking at, I've got a real stiff Democratic challenger coming up.
And, of course, this continues to move the date. I know later on in the show, Secretary of State John Merrill is going to talk with us, but moves the date for qualifying, right? We've now moved from, I think, what would have been tomorrow or would have been Friday, now moved to the 11th of February. They said they can move as far as July until they get this decided. And I guess there's somebody who, I mean, there's got to be people wondering, okay, well, maybe I got a chance. So it's not just those two. There might be some new names in the mix and people that want to run for AL1 or AL2.
Oh, sure. I think what you'll see is you'll see an actual Republican challenger in that 7th. And then you'll see, particularly in that Black Belt district, see a Democratic challenger emerge that's going to be serious. And so, you know, both Terry Sewell and, you know, I would guess maybe Barry Moore probably have to you know, get ready for a very serious general, which makes it very interesting because you win your primary in Alabama and you're done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now for those two seats, you got to be thinking about a general election. And so that's going to be a real, frankly, a whiplash for both, you know, members, whoever ends up being in that other contested district with Sewell. Both of them are going to have to think, well, I need to be careful here.
Oh, yeah, they got competition at the primary and the general level. I wonder if, like, you know, Terry Sewell's had such a lock on 7, but with this move, does that put, you know, with, I don't know exactly where, well, no, is it all of Birmingham that's in going to be in 7? Like, would Randall Woodfin be in? Would he be able to run for that district?
Yeah, I would think that he would still be in that one. And, I mean, part of the issue here that's really important is those districts are much more narrowly majority Black voter. So what we know about the Black voting population in Alabama is, let's just call it roughly 10% Republican and 90% Democrat. Well, if your margins are really thin, that 10% Republican Black vote really starts to matter. Mm-hmm. And the question for Alabama's lawmakers, if they're redrawing these maps, are, okay, we can do that, but we know where particularly like white Democratic voters are concentrated and things like that. So let's create that other half of the district that's pretty reliably Republican, bank on roughly 10% of the Black vote being Republican. And now you're really set up. And so that's the challenge right now is the just along racial lines, Black vote's about 90% Democrat, 10% Republican, and the white vote is, let's call it 70-20. I know that doesn't add up to 100, but right, somewhere around there is where the white vote is in terms of Republican versus Democrat in Alabama. And so this is going to require some real creative map drawing if Republicans want to hold or actually pick up the 7th.
They get this done in 2 weeks, do you think? Do you think it's possible?
It's certainly possible. I mean, these maps are floating around, right? So they've got these different versions, these different options. And so it's not like they're starting cold, But man, that is a high stakes change that is really going to matter in a very short period of time. But the court's been very clear. You got 2 weeks or we're going to do it.
All right. But before we wrap up, I always love your take on things judicial. Announcement today, Justice Stephen Breyer to retire from SCOTUS. Now, we just started, like, I picture the dominoes, right? You hit the first domino and here it goes. So what's going to happen here?
Oh, well, I mean, I think the interesting battle here, again, is going to be with Manchin and Sinema, because Biden's going to be under tremendous pressure to find an arch progressive to put on the Supreme Court to replace Breyer. And I think you're going to have moderate Democrats who are ultimately going to decide, are we going to go with the radical type jurist, or are we going to be two votes blocking it? And I think right now, given what they've done so far, I think they're going to expect somebody that's, if I had to guess, somebody like a Merrick Garland. That type of moderate Democrat is probably what they're going to require. But don't think for a minute that progressives aren't going to tell Biden, hey, you've got to come up with the most progressive, like AOC style liberal you can find.
Yeah. And what is the timeline on that? So Breyer announces, it was out there and I didn't read it. How long till he's replaced? Does it mean like, okay, I'm announcing that I'm going to stick around for another year, or that means he's out as soon as possible? Or you know what that means?
The announcement, I just saw the headline, said that he's retiring. And usually what that means is they communicated that to the administration and said, hey, I'm retiring. Gear up the wheels to replace me. And, you know, that takes a month or two in terms of Democrats have basically they want to get this done
before the
very
midterm,
clearly,
right?
Before the midterm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They don't want to risk a situation where they don't get a nominee confirmed before Republicans might take the Senate.
But the moderating factor, Manchin and Sinema, there on how liberal that nominee may be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that would be really interesting, is if Manchin and Sinema got in a battle of chicken with the progressives over, hey, are you going to give me a moderate nominee? And they ended up messing around until, you know, the midterms or something like that. I doubt that would happen, but it is entirely possible.
Ooh. All right. People want to read more about this. Of course, you're writing about this over at AL.com. People can go there and search for you or go direct to the horse's mouth. I'm not saying you're a horse, but if they want to do that, how do they find you?
At D. Cameron Smith on Twitter is a great place to join the conversation. And I'm going to have a column out this afternoon on this topic. So read it, check it out. Let me know what you think.
Cameron, as always, man, I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Sean.
There he is, Cameron Smith, AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. We're coming right back. Got a lot of text and grab some calls here when we return.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, just a couple minutes here before the news, and then we'll come back. Dale Leash from Lanyap joins us. All that urban camping ordinance was, what do they say, his headline, hotly debated at the city council meeting. We'll talk about that. Plus, the story that has dominated a lot of the minds over the last 24 hours or so, the Azalea Trail Maids and the Senior Bowl. We'll get to all that coming up with Dale in just a few minutes. The segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Now, that's my buddy, personal friend Trey. He's been doing this for 14 years in Mobile and Baldwin counties, and he's as local as it gets. His crew, local folks, his son, part of the crew. They're folks you know, and they do great work. I've had them work at my house. I've had them work at the radio station, the storage unit for the radio station. The story I told about the storage unit, I think, is telling. So we cleaned out a storage unit for the radio station. Not only did they get all the junk out of there that had been accumulating for a long time. There were desks in there from the 1970s. They get all that stuff out. And afterwards, this big storage unit, they sweep it out and clean it. It was like perfect. It was better than when we moved into it. So at that point, no question, get your deposit back. And so if you got a storage unit you're paying on every month, you don't need it. What stuff do you have in there that you need? Figure that out, get rid of that, and then let the junk go with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And make an appointment really easy. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go to their website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. They'll find a day that works for you and a window of time that works for you, and they'll make a good old-fashioned appointment. Then they show up when they say They, you, all you got to do is point at the stuff you want gone. I need that gone, that gone, that gone. They quote your price. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. You need junk gone. You need my friend Trey and 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, a quick text here from IT Jesus. Why is the burden of proof put on the assumption that all minorities are Dems? Mobile majority is black but stays as Republican. So there must be some black Republicans somewhere in Mobile. There's what I wish. You know, it hurts my soul. All the, I want everybody putting burkas, right? I just want to make decisions on the merits of people, not on how they look. But the stats in Alabama, you heard Cameron roll them out. It's at least the last time they checked it, 90-10. So 10% of black folks in Alabama vote Republican, 90% vote Democrat. Hey. He goes on to say, if this was a purple state, I'd understand the debate of the voting lines, but please explain why this even matters as a whole. So part of the discussion we're going to keep having right here at FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, it's at 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. It, just grab one of the texts from the last segment. Because Aiden in Citronelle, what's up, Citronelle? Which will be AL2, by the way. It was through. It could, Bertil, by the way, Aiden, Bertil's was shut down, you know, like they do on Sunday. I pulled through just to check, though. I was jonesing for a big Bama Burger combo. So Aiden says, Sean, so it's okay to gerrymander for a minority against a majority? If so, what about gerrymandering for Mobile Council seats? But let's go first on the state side. This is being decided. Number one, we've had the rule that we have one majority minority district in the state. Okay, so that is what the seventh is. But now you had a 3-judge panel, and I want to point out before everybody goes, "Well, it's Soros." It's two of the judges appointed by Trump that made that decision. So there's you know, it's not just a partisan battle. It's going to be. I mean, that's why you know, talking to Jeff and talking to Cameron Smith. They're 50-50, if not 60-40, that this AL1 split up into AL1 and AL2 is going to happen. So, believe me, we are going to talk about this a lot more going forward. All right, my man, Dale Leash, Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Lots to talk about on this Wednesday. How you doing? Did I lose him? There he is. Dale, are you there?
I'm doing all right, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. I've got to figure this out, though, because early in the week, I guess Monday, I had Representative Reynolds in. We're talking about this ordinance of urban camping. I don't know what we're supposed to call it now, but, I mean, urban camping. You can't be living on the public property, right?
I call it an urban camping ban.
Okay, urban camping ban.
Way to say it, yeah.
So he talked about it with me some on Monday. You've written about it. It went to the city council on Tuesday, and according to your headline, it was hotly debated.
Well, that was public safety committee. It was hotly debated in the council chambers, too, with a lot of speakers, you know, mostly advocates for folks that are homeless speaking out against it. But it was really the action really took place during the council committee, the public safety committee, where they discussed it and decided really nothing to this point except that they were going to hold it over until March 2nd and possibly have another meeting, you know, to kind of discuss it further and see where they are. A number of council members, most notably William Carroll, wanted to amend it a bit to kind of, you know, kind of make it less, you know, less about attacking the homeless in his mind. And you absolutely had some questions from Council President C.J. Small and Councilman Corey Penn seemed to be going towards not voting for it as written. So, as we all know, you got to have 5 votes to pass anything, well, mostly anything in the city council. So if you don't get one of those 3 on board, it's not going to pass. And then on the other side, you had Ben Reynolds, who is a co-sponsor of this I want to call it legislation. I guess legislation is the great word for it.
Yeah.
Ordinance legislation. who really just wants to get the vote done and really seemed eager to have a vote or to have people bring up amendments yesterday to what they wanted to see done and have those voted on. We're kind of at a situation now where it's just kind of at a standstill, so we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Okay. Well, but when it boils down to it, I know that there, you know, Councilman Reynolds had said this is about, it's in the public safety meeting and public health, having the trash and litter pile up and things left there on the, you know, on the public property. That only is part of it, right? There has to be somebody there depositing the stuff. I basically asked the question. I said, hey, if I throw a sleeping bag out of my truck riding down the road alongside the road, or somebody leaves it there who's homeless, is there any difference to that thing? It's litter either way. If somebody's stashing it there or just slinging it, I mean, that sleeping bag is litter either way.
Yeah, but I see the point too, where it's impossible to separate this from the issue we have with the homeless encampments, right?
Agreed.
Because that is where we're at. Now, there were some interesting solutions brought up at the meeting that Councilman Carroll brought up, and they were, I think, things that we have tried in the past. Now, granted, things we've tried in the past clearly haven't worked as well as we would like because we still have the issue, but those included, you know, putting a portable toilet up, putting a washing station up, putting a dumpster up near these encampments so that you could maybe, you know, some of these individuals would discard of the trash in a more proper way. And it seemed like that Casey Calloway, the chief resiliency officer of the city, I got there. Didn't think I would do it. The chief resiliency officer of the city seemed intrigued by at least the dumpster idea. So it sounds like the city, in the meantime, before we act on this bill, the city might take steps to maybe rent out a dumpster and put that near an encampment and see what happens with the trash in that respect. Because, I mean, ideally what we all want is for the trash to be picked up, right? I mean, I don't think anybody legitimately hates the homeless and wants to see them gone or understand.
I would like to see them into a house. I'd like to see them under a roof.
Into a house, sure. And that's a whole other. I agree with Ben Reynolds on that. That's a whole other conversation.
Yes.
You know, we have housing first. They obviously don't have the resources that they need to house everyone. You know, and also you've got the 15 place, which has been shut down, which was sort of like a day shelter and seemed to work out pretty well. So maybe we get that running back up. I mean, that idea has been tossed around as well. There's several ideas that have been discussed that maybe are a little separate from this ordinance that we're talking about now.
Okay. So, and I'm going to take just a second here. You're the journalist. I'm the editorialist. So I'll editorialize for just a second. And the facilities, the wash place and the porta potty and those things. Okay. People will probably argue. I don't even have to open up the text line that will encourage more people, homeless people to be in Mobile. But the dumpster thing, I'm just going to say this, and this is anecdotal, but here at Airport and 65, we have a lot of homeless people right here at Airport and 65, a dumpster that's not far from here. Over by where they did a demolishing, and then they put a dumpster in, and behind a restaurant there, people are pulling stuff. I see it myself. People are pulling stuff out of the dumpster, not putting stuff in. I'm not trying to be mean. I don't have a hate in my heart. I have love in my heart for people that are in that situation, but I'm just telling you what I see. I don't see people putting trash in that dumpster. I see people hauling stuff out of there. You know, I mean, it's just so I don't know how a dumpster, you know, listen, These questions, can we have, and that's one of the things you said, it's a discussion for another day, but I wonder if we can have this discussion about this litter without having a discussion about the homeless. I don't know if we're just whistling past the graveyard on this.
I mean, they're related without a doubt, especially in some locations, and especially where you talked about Airport 965 and over there, Tillman's Corner area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting because the two sponsors of this ordinance, District 5
and 4,
Councilman Joel Daves, and District 4 Councilman Ben Reynolds, they represent those areas. So you know, and Ben Reynolds basically made this argument that he campaigned on trying to fix the litter issue in his area, and specifically an encampment he was talking about near Tillman's Quarter is right on a tributary that goes into Dog River. And he's like, we can't have that. I campaigned against, you know, putting an end to the litter problem, and this is one way. This is my solution to that problem. And he basically said, you know, my people have had enough. We got to do something. So that's what he's doing. And I think he's a little frustrated that some of the council members aren't putting forth other ideas that might help.
All right. I want to switch to the story that is the umbrella over all other stories over the last 24 hours, it seems like. The Senior Bowl and the Azalea Trail Maids. Now, think we've had motion on this today. The Azalea Trail Maids are back in, right? Or help me with this. What happened? Who was responsible? And then what changed?
Well, you know, my buddy Scott Johnson, coworker, he did the story yesterday. I was mostly out of pocket, but I have been keeping up with the quote unquote scandal. And my understanding, is that in a statement, the Senior Bowl said that. And it was very carefully worded statement, I might add. I think it was to the effect of that the trail maids have been invited to basically to the pregame festivities. It's still up in the air whether they'll actually participate in the game or be shown on camera or whatnot. So, you know, that I guess we're still trying to get to the bottom of that. But, yes, they have been invited to at least some of the festivities. And they had not been invited previously.
Disinvited is not the word. Not invited. Who's in charge of inviting or not inviting?
Well, I think ultimately the Senior Bowl is in charge of inviting. But let's not kid ourselves here. The NFL has a lot to say and do about, you know, what the Senior Bowl does this week, because this is the NFL's week, and, you know, the Senior Bowl needs the NFL to stay relevant. So let's call a spade a spade. I think the NFL had a lot to do with it as well. I don't know if you'll ever get anybody to actually say that, but it just makes sense.
So, I mean, we'd believe then that somebody from here went back to the NFL and said, like, we can't, I know you wanted us to do, if it was them, I know you wanted us to do this, but right. we can't live up to that. We got
to
have.
And to be fair, I think the NFL is more concerned about the practices and the actual, they're more concerned about the practices and the scouting and their coaches that are going to be at the game. I don't know if they care as much about the pregame festivities, the parade, the concert, stuff like that. That may be more under the Senior Bowl's purview. And in that case, maybe the Senior Bowl just stepped up and said, we'll do it for these. Not too sure yet about the game.
Okay. So they are back in at some level, the Azalea Trail Maids.
Yes. Absolutely. Don't know what that level is yet. Keep reading LanyetMobile.com. Reporter Scott Johnson has been on that subject. And so just keep looking for more stories on that as the week progresses, as we get closer to the NFL's arrival into Mobile.
All right. And then, you know, I've talked the first half of the show, and I will later next hour, y'all, about redistricting statewide on federal offices. That's a big hubbub right now. But you've reported that the city is hosting these virtual town hall meetings on the redistricting plan. Are they people turning out for the, is it Facebook where they go?
They had two meetings yesterday, which was a terrible day for me. Given that it's our press day. So I don't know what the turnout was for the virtual meetings yet. I'm going to research that. I'm going to have a story on that next week. But they not only have they done the virtual town hall meetings, they have a website that is interactive, or they have a web page on the website that is interactive that will show you. You can actually go in and play around with the districts and see what they're looking at when they make the changes, see what the original districts were with the 2020 population and demographics, and see where the changes have been made. And I think when I first started reporting on this, we were at version 2.2 in the mayor's redistricting plan. We were all the way up to at least version 2.5 that I know about publicly. And those should be available. They update the webpage every Wednesday. So today should have a brand new batch of ideas and plans. And like I said, this is going to continue until February 12th when the mayor officially hands it over to the council via ordinance, and then it's the council's baby at that point. So We're in for a lot of changes. It's very hard as a weekly newspaper to report on it from week to week because the minute I report on it, it's changed.
Yeah.
Somebody had a conversation with somebody. Somebody wanted to change something. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But it's probably the most open process that we've ever had as far as redistricting, maybe even on any level. This is truly incredible.
Yeah, it's good for people to see what's happening. I want to point out, though, something you and I have talked about maybe even last week, for people to realize this is being done before and without the discussion of annexation. So this
right.
could go through.
We'll have to do it all over again.
And then annexation could happen and we'd go right back to this. Is that correct? If annexation went through?
That is my understanding, unless somebody can show me a DOJ opinion that speaks differently. I believe that if you annex a large enough portion, that you have to do the redistricting all over again. And according to Voting Rights Act, DOJ, and I think that's the case in this aspect as well.
All right. Dale Leash, LandyapMobile.com. Tell folks they want to pick up, for some reason, if they want to get the old-fashioned way and actually hold the paper in their hand where they find that. And then if not, if they're a hip young person like me and want to go online, tell them how to do that as well.
We have purple boxes all over the city that have copies of the paper copies of the newspaper in them. We also have racks at like the Winn-Dixie on Catherine Street, other places that I don't frequent as much. So please pick up a paper if you want to read it from week to week. If you want to subscribe, go to LandyapMobile.com. You get all the things that you get with the paper, including a digital copy of the paper that's put on the website. And you get all the breaking news and content that we provide that maybe doesn't make the paper. So please subscribe. Help us out. We're locally owned, locally operated. We're here. We're not going anywhere, so we appreciate the support.
I'm a big fan of what y'all do, man. I can't can't wait to talk to you again next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, there he is. Dale Leash, LandyapMobile.com. We're right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, we will get to your calls and your text in just a second. I'll say hi to my buddy David McCrary, LCM Motor Cars. And I love these stories of how y'all work for the customer. You said you had somebody come in today looking for a buy here, pay here place.
We did, Sean. They came in this morning and just walked up to the patio and said, hey, I'm looking for a buy here, pay here. And I said, well, why do you want to do that? And then they explained that they'd had this, that, and other problems. And I said, give me 5 minutes and let me see if we can help you. And literally in less than 5 minutes, she had a decent down payment, and she had proof of income. We walked in, and we had an approval, and on a nice vehicle, a lot nicer vehicle than probably she could have bought anywhere else for what she was trying to do. If she'd end up somewhere else, she'd been in trouble.
That's the beauty of having all those options for financing out there. So talk to folks who want to come out, check out the inventory, and look at financing, how they find you.
Come check us out. We're at Highway 90 in Plantation. Give us a call at 251-375-0068 or just go to our website, lcmmotorcars.com. Check us out.
Thanks, David.
Have a good day, Sean.
You too. David McCrary checking in from LCM Motor Cars. It's a cool story. I like that. All right. Text. Oh, my gosh. Try to get to as many of these as we can here. Brian in Fairhope. Urban camping. That's rich. I'm empathetic to the homeless, but nobody wants uncontrolled campsites. Where and everywhere. Let's see. Is that a Seinfeld reference, right? It's sometimes I think that's right. A local rapper says if they wear the urban sombrero, then they should be allowed to urban camp. I think that was in Seinfeld, right? Billy Bob in Fairhope said they're just recycling. Listen, I look at this with heart, fellow human beings, and but we're in the midst of it. Right here where the studios are, we're in the midst of it. We see a lot of it. I know we're not the only area of town, but see a lot of it. And just anecdotally, this idea about putting the dumpster out, I see people taking stuff out of dumpsters, not putting stuff in dumpsters. This texter says, I'm afraid that the ordinance as written would drive the homeless onto private property. It would be a disaster for the citizens. Interesting thought process. There are, you know, in our area here, there's some private parcels that are to our south that I know there's encampments there as well. Make an ordinance or else people will be setting up their autonomous zones everywhere. And unnamed texter, I had not thought of an autonomous zone in quite a while. Let's see. Bill says, isn't it ironic the Senior Bowl canceled the North-South format, yet they play the game on a campus locally known as South? We love our Southern football, but can no longer root for the South team. 70 years of tradition have been thrown away. The Azalea Trail will apparently still not be inside the stadium and not on television. Any councilman against getting rid of urban camping is hurting Mobile. This is Joshua. Remember the homeless guy that tried to rape the girl in the parking garage? He had bowed up to me more than once. Heard that he murdered someone, served 20, and got out. You know, on the flip side, though, I mean, Joshua, it's been years ago, but had folks that would call this show that would buy batteries to listen to the show. They're not going to say where they live, but they lived on public property in the city. One, if not both men, were Vietnam veterans. That's what they wanted to do and live there. I mean, because I would ask them off air, it's like, can I get you help? Can I get you with somebody? They said, no, we're doing what we want to do. But they would be bothered by people that were, you know, they said, yeah, these people in here are leaving trash and they're doing this and that and the other. They almost were like trying to police that area themselves. So I think that it's monolithic is not right. You know, that there's all different kind of folks that are in that position. But I do want to say you can't have the trash. You can't have the encampments. But you got to have heart and figure out how to help these people. Those people that will take the help. There are some that will not. Unnamed texter says, as a former trail mate, that's cool. I'm also concerned about this quote in the Johnson article. Says, often they don't speak as their duties involve smiling, waving, and having their photos taken. I mean, really. Okay, this is from Scott Johnson's article at Landyap. I see what you're talking about. Cool to know you, Azalea Trail mate. I like that. That's good stuff. All right, coming back, Art Tom from the NRA joins us right here on Midday Mobile.